Good morning.
Good morning.
What a joy it is again to worship with you. I understand that a number of your congregation are traveling today to a memorial service in Chicago, and that your pastor has preached in Chicago at a church this morning. So we do offer prayers for their safe travels and the return. It's a joy to be with you this morning. It seems that we're always in transition in our lives. And we're always looking to see what we can be or do with our lives. And ladies and gentlemen, no matter what stage of your life, that's true. Whether you're young or getting to be in my generation, we're looking to see what we can do with what God has given us. So today's passage deals with, and I'm using this title, what were you created or what were you made to do? And Lynn and I have this discussion all the time. What are your talents? And we look around and we try to compare our talents with others. I look at this church and I see a very talented congregation. Always have. Very well educated. Seeking to know the truth. Wanting to use your gifts. And so this will be a continual thing in your lives to see what God is doing. What exciting things He's doing in your life. Several years ago in London, the city had many complaints about London's mass transit system, like we do in St. Louis. It seems that the city's buses tended to drive right past bus stops, even though there were customers standing in line waiting to be picked up. Called upon to explain their actions, the London Transit authorities released the following statement, which has become infamous with public relations departments everywhere. It read, "It is impossible for us to maintain our schedules if we're always having to stop and pick up passengers." Now, what's wrong with that statement? Well, here's their answer. They got their priorities confused. They thought their job was to keep a schedule when in reality, their job was to pick up passengers and deliver them to their destinations. Because they got their priorities confused, they failed to do that which they were created to do. So, the question today is, what were you created to do? I look at you, I see talented people. I understand we have visitors going back to Taiwan tomorrow. I love Taiwan, beautiful country. I spent really many years there traveling back and forth. So the key is not so much to identify what we have, but to use what you've been given. 1 Peter 4:10 says, "Each one should use whatever gift he has received to serve others, faithfully administering God's grace in its various forms." So today, you had the passage read to you, Matthew 25:14-30. This is a familiar passage, but it's part of a series of difficult passages that talk about end time events, about judgments. So let us set the context. This parable comes from Matthew's gospel, where Jesus is giving an answer to the disciples' questions about his second coming. Matthew 24:23. "When will this happen, and what will be the sign of your coming about the end of the age?" Jesus warns them to be on guard so that no one will deceive them, and helps them to understand that once he leaves, he will come again. He challenges them in Matthew 24:44 to be ready, because the Son of Man will come in an hour when he is least expected. Now, in chapter 25, he compares his coming to the Eastern custom of a bridegroom arriving in the middle of the night. He concludes by saying in Matthew 25:13, "Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour." Chapter 25 ends with the separation of the sheep and the goats. Sandwiched in between these parables is the parable of the talents. And one of these days, I'm going to come in and do a Bible study in each one of these and tie them all together. They're difficult because it talks about end times. And for those of you who like to study the Bible, Compare these with Revelation chapter 20. Very important comparisons in biblical studies. And there are a lot of controversies. So I just want to bring controversies up to you. It's always great to talk about our interpretations of Scripture and about end times. About the rapture. About premillennialism. You all know these things. They're interesting studies. But not today. Notice verse 14. It says, it's going to be like a man going on a journey. The word again indicates that Jesus is using one more parable to explain future events. The man going on the journey is Jesus. So as we look through these powerful passages, we're going to see some stewardship lessons out of them. What are we to do with our gifts? Number one, what we have is not ours. I'm going to read that to you again. What you have is not yours. What we have is not ours. Verse 14 continues by saying that this man was getting ready for journey, called his servants, entrusted his property to them. It was common for wealthy men to take long journeys during that time. Before they would leave, they would make arrangements to have someone take care of their everyday task. But even more than that, they would delegate the control and multiplication of their wealth to trustworthy employees. They were expected to bring a return on what had been handed over to them to bring this return. Given the uncertainties of transportation those days, the time of return for even a well-planned trip was open-ended, unsure. There was no doubt in the minds of these servants that the property and money still belonged to the master. I read that again. There was no doubt in their minds of these servants that the property that had been given to them and the money that had been given to them still belonged to the master. They were the possessors, but not the owners. Their job was to manage what they were given. Likewise, we must remember that everything we have has been given to us and is not really ours anyway. Psalm 24:1 says, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it." The world's rather fragile now, isn't it? You want to be worried about North Korea? You should be. The world is fragile. Have you allowed this basic premise to permeate your life? You really don't own anything. Everything belongs to the Lord. Until we recognize this truth, we will not be good managers of what He has entrusted to us. Our days are in His hands. Our gifts and abilities are on loan from Him. Our money is in advance from the Almighty. Our houses, clothes, cars, and every possession we have doesn't belong to us. We really don't own anything. Folks, I got this out of my wallet. I had one of these. It's a dollar. You know how fragile this is? Do I own this? Well, I have it in my pocket. Is it mine? Well, I can tell you, I've worked for it. Is it mine? You know how quickly this can go away. But how much we love this, don't we? If you're honest, don't you? Come on. Isn't it nice to have a whole bunch of these stacked up here? Of course it is. So I'm going to put it back in my pocket. Okay? It's back in my pocket again. So, what you really have, you don't own. Now remember the passage. All of these things were given to these trusted people from the master to use in his service. Second, we're given what we can handle. And this is what a lot of people don't understand. In verse 15, we see that the master gave some talents to three of his servants. To one he gave 5 talents of money. To one he gave 2 talents of money. And to the other 1 talent according to their abilities. Then he went on his journey. He left. We need to pause here to recognize that this word talent is different from our present day understanding, but I can surely see the parallel. A talent was a measure of weight used in Revelation 16, 21. From the sky, huge hailstones of about 100 pounds each fell upon men. A talent was also used to indicate a very large sum of money. Its value varied depending on whether it was copper, silver, or gold. While commentators differ on the exact amount, most agree, this is interesting, that it would take an ordinary laborer almost 20 years of his life to earn one talent. To put this into our economy, using a minimal hourly wage, a talent would be the equivalent of about $300,000. A talent, just giving you a figure. Now, that's variable. Commentators will jump up and down and give you different amounts, but let's just use that figure. While we're focusing this passage on discovering, developing, and deploying our spiritual gifts, this parable has first reference to how we invest ourselves and our money. It has a secondary application on how we use our God-given talents and abilities. The master gave the first servant five talents, which if you multiply that's worth about $1.5 million. Significant. The second person received two talents, or approximately $600,000. And the third steward got one talent, or $300,000. Even though there's a big difference between five talents and one talent, the person who received one talent still had a lot of money, $300,000. So that reminds us that God gives out of his abundance to us. There's a disparity among incomes in here. There's a disparity in our family. It's just different. My one son-in-law is in computers and big time, and he's been in it, and makes, I'll just say, a ton of money. Okay? I've been in teaching for 100 years, and I make this much. Does that sound jealous to you a little bit? Just a little bit? I mean, he deals with things and screens and X's and stuff, and I deal with what I think is more important things. I teach, but I'm down here, and he's up here. Is there a disparity? So, I want you to notice that each servant received talents according to his ability. Your responsibility is tied to your ability. This is very interesting. God's kingdom purpose is not to operate according to what we think is fair, but according to what is best. Do I think it's fair that I'm going to go back to this, make this much? And this young whippersnapper, I like that term, makes this much and is no bit smarter than I am? Does that seem unfair? What? Come on now. Of course it does, doesn't it? But it was given, I can't do a tenth of what he does. No, no. A thousandth of what he does on the computer. I can turn mine on, and I can type on the keyboards, and I can make it do stuff, but that's not anywhere near what he does. But he can't do what I do in a classroom. He can't stand up and encourage people to think. You see? Now, we're given according to our talents and abilities. In 1 Corinthians 3:5, after challenging believers to be united but not breaking into subgroups who follow different leaders, Paul writes, "What, after all, is Apollos? What is Paul? Only servants through whom you came to believe as the Lord assigned to each his task." Did you catch that? Each one of us has been assigned a task. It's our job to be faithful to what he has been giving us to do with our lives. You're responsible for you and your abilities. You have what you have because God gave it to you. I watch these athletes that are just amazing to me on what they can do. And I see sometimes the ego that goes along with it. It really bothers me. Because, you know, I know how hard they work, but they were born with that too, weren't they? I was born with what I have. I think I've shared this with you before, and I will again. I've always wanted to be able to dunk a basketball. Okay? I love shooting basketballs. That means jumping up and putting the ball through the hoop. I know the technique. I know how to do it. I could practice it 10 hours a day. And folks, I'm never going to dunk a basketball. Because I wasn't made to do that. I was made to be whatever I am, with whatever these are, and I can shoot, I can do some good things, but I'm not going to be able to dunk a basketball. I wasn't given that DNA. It's a shame. I would really like to have done that just once. It's our job to be faithful to what He has given us to do. You have what you have because of that. Now, God expects us to manage His gifts within the boundaries of our ability that He has wired into us. We're wired certain ways. As we have learned from 1 Corinthians 12, that's familiar. You have different kinds of gifts, different services, different workings, and the Holy Spirit distributes these responsibilities to each one of us based upon what He determines. God entrusts different things to different people according to His sovereign purposes. In other words, He knows what you can handle. He knows what you can do. Our job is to be faithful with whatever amount we have to work with. Do we really trust, I'm going to say that again, do we really trust that God knows more about us than we even know about ourselves? I do trust that. I really do. Because He knows me. In fact, no one in this room knows anyone better than themselves. You look at yourself, you know what you really are. You can't look even to your spouse and know what she really is. You think you do, even after all of these years. But you really don't. I trust that God knows us better and He assigns us our task. Here's another. Number three, we must invest in what we've been given. Verse 16 tells us the man who received 5 talents went at once. He put his money to work and gave 5 more talents, doubled it to almost $3 million. Didn't waste any time, but immediately went to work on his investment and doubled the portion. The person who got 2 talents did the same thing. Didn't say that in the text that he went at work immediately, but he did invest. And he doubled his master's money, ending up with 4 talents. Verse 18 describes a different approach of the third servant. But the man who received 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground, took his money from his master, and hid it. Even though we don't read about any specific instructions for what to do with the money, the first 2 guys went to work, multiplied their investment. The 1 talent person went off and buried his blessing. The practice of hiding valuables in the ground was quite common back then. It's one of the safest and least profitable ways of protecting possessions. An illustration. Because Antonio's voice was high and squeaky, he didn't make the tryouts for the Cremona Boys Choir. When he took violin lessons, the neighbors told his parents that he should stop. Yet Antonio still wanted to make music. It's like me. I love music. If you heard me sing, I'd be off the platform in the moment. I love the praise group. Didn't you love the praise group today? I thought they were terrific. I love that music. And I can say this, I guess. I envy their talents. I have no singing talent whatsoever. So when I sing away in the congregation, it's so off key, it's horrible, but I still like it. But nobody's going to hire me to sing anywhere in any congregation. His friends gave him a hard time because his only talent was whittling. When he was older, he served as apprentice to a violin maker. His knack for whittling grew into a skill of carving, and his hobby became his craft. He worked patiently and faithfully. By the time he died, he left over 1,500 violins, each bearing his name, Antonio Stradivarius. His talent was whittling. He loved music. They're the most sought-after violins in the world. Antonio couldn't sing or play or preach or teach but his responsibility was to use his ability. And violins from him are still making beautiful music today. I get so frustrated. Linda laughs at my tools that I have in my garage. You know, I have a screwdriver, a pair of pliers, and a hammer, and all I do is do damage with them. I don't do anything really good. Frustrates me like, oh, get out. Because I should be able to go out and nail two boards together. Can't do it to save my life. Don't have that ability. Don't have the patience. Once I bang two or three nails and bend them over, I'm slamming those boards with my hammer and talking to the boards. I am no good with these things. You see? It just drives me crazy. I should be. I can think about it. I can read books. I can know carpentry. I read that stuff. But when I get the hammer and the nail, it does not compute. You see? Isn't that amazing? I wasn't given that ability. At least I've never found it. So our potential is God's gift to us. What we do with our gifts is our gift to Him. Zig Ziglar has said, "You're the only person on earth who can use your ability." So, are you investing what you've been given, regardless of how much it is, or have you buried this and kept it hidden from others? 4, day of accountability is coming. We don't like this. None of us want to be audited, but we'll be audited someday in our use of our gifts with the Almighty. We'll have to give an account for how we've used what we've been given. Look at verse 19. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. Jesus is coming again, and there's going to be a day. While most of us believe this in our heads, we don't often live with this eternal thought in our hearts or in our actions. If we would think more about His return, we'd be more focused on making eternal return on our investments. Romans 14:12 says, "So then each one of us will be given an account of himself to God." It was the duty of the servants to always bear that in mind when the master would be returning and would settle his accounts. And so we've got to realize, folks, the use of our talents is real. Jesus Christ is coming. It's in all the biblical passages and alludes to that in Scripture. So we need to be faithful in using our talents for Him. He's invested something in you, and I look at your eyes, and I look to see He's invested something in you. I consider to have been ashamed that after 30-something years of teaching, I never had that chance to teach in those 30 years. I would have lost. I love teaching. And I thought, what a shame it would have been if I didn't get to teach and use those. Or if I thought I couldn't teach. Now, does that sound egotistical? Maybe a little. But I've been given a talent. My wife tells me I could be given a chemistry book and I could get up and teach it. But I just read a book and teach it like I really know what I'm talking about. It's called teaching, although I couldn't tell you anything about chemistry. You see, I sound good. She said I just talk good. He's coming back. Your job may be big or small, but whatever you do the best for your ability. And be ready for your audit. Wouldn't it be terrible to be ashamed and unprepared when Jesus comes back? 1 John 2. "And now, dear children, continue in Him, so that when He appears, we can be confident and unashamed before Him at His coming." Well, folks, I think I'm toast. I don't think I've done enough of you. I mean, this is this work ethics. I never think I've really done enough or been the best I could have been. Could have been more and better. I always think that every day. So when I stand before Him, I'm going to go, whoa, whoa, it's just a natural thing. So, what we do with what we have reveals our view of God. As we come to these verses 20 to 25, we see that a man who's been given 5 talents brought 4 with him. The language is insightful, by the way. He says, "See, I have gained 5 more." The word "see" means behold or look. He was eager to invest what he had been given and is excited to show the master what he had done. He's bubbling with enthusiasm and he's really thrilled. That's the intent of the words in that passage in Greek. He couldn't wait to present what he had done because he wanted to please the owner. The man with the two talents approached this time of reckoning with the same anticipation and excitement. Master was thrilled with both of them because they demonstrated responsibility for their abilities. He says the exact same thing to both of them. Well done, good and faithful servants. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The master increased the resources after they had proven themselves, and Jesus said a similar thing. Give, in Luke 6:38, give, and it will be given to you. These two faithful servants received affirmation, great job, well done. Promotion, since you've done so well with what I've given you, I'm going to give you even more responsibility. And celebration, you've made me happy, let's celebrate together. The phrase well done can be translated excellent or wonderful. They were faithful and they were called good because they had the right view of the master. Likewise, when we see God for who he is, we will want to be faithful and focus on doing good things. God's looking for faithful people, for those who manage their resources for God's purposes, not necessarily just for their own. And friend, when we're responsible for what we've been given, we'll be even given more responsibilities. The one talent person came a bit more reluctantly to the master and said in verse 24 now, I know you are a hard man. Notice that the first words out of his mouth were about him. I know. We could translate this into, I always knew. The two other persons kept focus on the master when he returned, Master, you entrusted me. The third person had a wrong view of the master and had his mind made up even before he received his talent. He looked at his master as someone who was hard and harsh instead of loving and gracious. A man by the name of Tozer was right when he said that what we think about God is the most important thing about us. If we view God as a tyrant, then we're going to filter everything through this lens as a tyrant. Some of you may be secretly angry with God because you think he did something or didn't do something he should have. As a result, our view of him is skewed. Your preconceived notions prevent you from seeing him as a good God of grace. And as a result, you refuse to serve him with what you've been given. And when we blame God, we end up burying our blessings. A faulty view of God can also lead to excuses. In verse 25, this man declares that the reason he didn't do anything with what he had been given, because he was afraid. His fear paralyzed him, and so he decided to play it safe. And by the way, I don't condemn him wholly on this. He was given his talent. He was afraid if he lost money, the master would be angry at him. He hid the money to make sure it wouldn't be lost. And he accomplished exactly what he set out to achieve. Nothing. Like saying goes, if you aim at nothing, you're going to hit it every time. Isn't it a shame to think when you come to the end of your life, you feel like you've accomplished nothing? When you've been given a talent, I don't care if it's one or five or ten, you're expected to use that, and once you do, you're going to feel worth and value. And it doesn't mean you stand up and preach. It doesn't mean that you stand up and teach or sing. It can mean that you manage your home better than anyone else. You take care of your children. You bring them up as best you can. You help others. Whatever your talent is, it could be cleaning the auditorium. If that's what you can do and you do it with joy, then you do it. And that's no less than somebody standing up here preaching. I guarantee you. A wrong view of God always leads to fear. So I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. A right view of God always leads to faith. If you you're struggling with fear today, the best antidote is to get a better understanding of the character of God and ask Him to grow your faith. Courage isn't the absence of fear. Courage is moving ahead in spite of your fears. I think the first two guys were probably a little afraid as well, don't you? But because they knew the Master's character, instead of being frozen by fear, they stepped out in faith. So let's look at the differences between the two servants and the one who took a dive and hid his money. The first two were determined to make a profit. The third was determined not to take a loss. The first two were willing to work hard and take risk. The third took no risk. The first two received the gift. The third refused the gift. First two wanted to advance the master's domain. The third had no interest in what mattered to the master. First two viewed the money as an opportunity. The third guy saw it as a problem. The first two allowed the master's gift to change their lives. The third refused to get in touch with his own life. First two invested, the other one wasted. First two saw a blessing, the third person saw a burden. So, number six, we finally have what we must use or we will lose it. Verse 26 reveals that the master saw right through the flimsy excuses of the third man. The man was wrong because he deliberately misrepresented both the master and himself. He falsely accused the master of being harsh, and he lied when he said in verse 25, "See, here is what belongs to you." He actually owed his employer not only for one talent, but for whatever it would have earned had he been faithful. Amazingly, instead of owning his guilt, he behaves as if the master should have given him credit for being so cautious. Many things keep people from full surrender and service. We all have an element of not using our gifts in us. Our culture seems to be set on selfishness as well. I'm convinced that useless feelings are extremely dangerous to our spiritual lives. When we think we can put something off till later, we ultimately discover that it will one day be too late. Yeah. Hebrews 6:11 says, "We want each of you to show the same diligence to the very end, in order to make your hope sure." Because his third person did not use what he had been given, he lost it, according to verse 28. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. It's the word use it or lose it principle. Don't hold what you have, develop it, compound it, and multiply it. And finally, what you do with what you've been given will make a difference. In verse 29, we learn that those who are faithful with the little things will have an abundance or excess. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Those who have given themselves in full surrender and selfless service will know why they were created. A distinguishing mark of Christian service is giving. A lack of service also reveals a heart that needs to be surrendered to God. Stewardship is best defined as the use of God-given resources for the accomplishment of God-given goals. How did you line up with those principles? What we have isn't ours. You're given what you can handle. Got to invest what we've been given. Day of accountability is coming. What we do with what we have reveals what you think about God. And we must use what we have or we're going to lose it. And what you do with what you have does make a difference. Have you ever seen the Antique Roadshow on TV? I like PBS. I like that show. I like PBS. By the way, there's a good Amelia Earhart thing tonight. Make sure you watch that too. I'm going to watch it tonight on the History Channel. I like watching how people bring their old items to the appraisers. Find out how much it's worth. You ever think you have something like that? I do. Many times those who bring in lavish items come on the show thinking they have a huge treasure. More often than not, they find out their treasure is a forgery or a duplicate and worth very little. Then there are some who come with a small trinket or painting that was up in their dusty attic. They're just happy to be on the show. And many times, these people discover that their item is worth far more than they ever thought. The people who are hoping to hit it big with their extravagant item are a bit like we are when we think that we can impress God with what we have. On the other hand, some of us think that we don't have much to offer. But what we have is really a treasure from God Himself. Our responsibility is to use our ability to invest in God's kingdom. God has placed His business into our hands and will bless our faithfulness. Folks, you have been given talents. You have been given talents. You're going to be judged on how you use those talents. This church is talented. And this church should be given to the service of the Lord and worship Him. I pray for each one of you. By the way, I pray for this church daily. Brief sentence prayer. That He's here and He's helping you use your talents. I believe in you. God believes in you. He wants you to invest in Him. Let's pray together. Oh God, our Father, what a joy it is to be in your house. We know you've entrusted us with gifts. Each one of us has a different gift. It may not be as many gifts that someone else has, but it's a gift you've given us. Help us to know that we're responsible for using that gift, responsible for serving you with that gift. Help us not to be afraid or frozen by fear. Help us to use our talents, just knowing that we're made for a purpose. Lord, help us to understand that purpose and to serve you. In thy Son's name, amen.